5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to Tech Talk from RNIB Connect Radio, the RNIB's technology show for blind and partially sighted people. See technology differently.
Oh, hello, welcome to another hour of Tech Talk. Yes, it's me, Stephen Scott, and joined this week by my guests as always. I've got Robin Christofferson from AbilityNet. Hello to you, Robin.
Hello, Stephen. I'm looking forward to talking about Apple stuff.
Oh, I cannot wait to get into the Apple stuff. Let's get Tim on. Tim Schwartz, of course, from lifeafterblindness.com. Hello to you, Tim.
Hello, Stephen. Hello, Robin. Yeah, we have a little bit to talk about Apple. Sure, yeah, a little bit.
We've got a lot to get through this hour. I mean, the running order is ridiculous this week. Okay, we've got emails Andy with us as well, although if I'm honest, I think this week we'll just call you Andy, if that's okay.
Oh, right, okay. Yeah, I'm just here to make up the numbers.
Well, I think it's just that the chances of getting to any emails this week are going to be very slim, but we'll do our best. We will do our best. There is a lot to talk about this week. Look, we are going to talk about Apple in a moment. I also want to tell you what else is coming up on the show today. We're going to be hearing about the Dolphin Easy Reader app, which RNIB and other organizations are encouraging blind people to use as the way of accessing digital libraries. And of course, in RNIB's case, that's RNIB's Talking Books Library. Paul Porter is going to be joining us a bit later to talk about that and discuss the new Easy Reader. Well, not the new Easy Reader app, but the app that is now on a new device. That's the bit that's really interesting. We'll talk about that later. Also, we're going to be hearing another one of our stories from the Technology for Life team. We're going to learn today all about custom iOS gestures, courtesy of Chris Turner at the Tech for Life team. He's going to be joining us a bit later to discuss that. And if there's any time left, I promise you, if there's any time left, we will bring you emails.
Email. We get email.
But not right now. We're going to start with Apple because Apple announced some products. Look, guys, I'm not going to lie to you. I'm tired today, right? I'm tired. And do you know why? I think I figured out why I'm tired. I think it's because last week I was leaping up and down at the prospect of these new Apple products. And I think I've just tired myself out, to be honest. It is so exciting. Robin, pick it up for us. Let's talk about what we've heard. I mean, I know people come here for the news. They come here to find out what's going on, and they also find out whether it's worth buying or not from us. So let's talk about what Apple actually announced last week.
Yes, so it was all about Macs, three new Macs. It was Macs to the Max, if you see what I mean. So
Return of the Mac, Return of the Mac. Yeah, that one. Mark Morrison, wasn't it?
Yep.
Andy, you know people. You know people that sing.
You can't keep singing that. We'll get a copyright claim.
Return of the Mac.
So close to the original.
Sue me.
No more.
Mark Morrison, yes. Return of the Mac. 95?
He should have been called Mac Morrison. That would have been cooler. Anyway, sorry, Robin.
He wasn't at the event last week.
So we have three new Macs that are based on the new Apple Silicon, the M1 chip, or system on a chip, I should say. And we've got a new MacBook Air, and a new Mac Mini, which is the one that I'm particularly excited about, and a MacBook Pro. And these are based on this M1 chip that is powering the latest iPad, but with some added extras. So things that a PC needs to be able to support Thunderbolt, for example, and a beefier GPU and stuff like that. But they're all built in, and a massive neural engine. So a quarter of the kind of area, the surface area of the chip, is dedicated to this new neural engine for image system processing and various other things. The upshot is that because it's all in there, it's going to be ultra fast, very low power, so very power efficient, and pretty high performance as well. So it's bringing all the benefits of mobile devices to laptops, to PCs, I guess, and all the power that you have with the desktop versions of that software. There's quite a few caveats or question marks to what I've just said, which I'm sure we'll discuss, but that's the basics wouldn't you think? Okay.
Yeah. I mean, there's obviously a lot in there. People are going to be saying, what on earth is a GPU? You know, what does neural engine mean? Is that what you go and you get a scan at the hospital for? You know, I mean, these are questions that you, you know, we want to answer for people. But, you know, truthfully, I don't really care about any of that stuff because it doesn't mean anything to me when I'm using a computer. The question I have is, how fast will it work? How will VoiceOver behave? And, you know, how power efficient will it be? Will it be able to run all day if I've got everything running all the time? And really, that is at the core of what Apple Silicon is all about, isn't it? That the whole purpose here is to give you better performance, is to give you that longer battery life, and just make it, you know, I guess in the MacBook Air's case, almost a silent approach to all of that. What I think people don't realize is that nearly everybody at the moment who's got an iPhone, or, you know, fairly recent iPhone, say iPhone 11, maybe even an iPhone 10, will be carrying around with them the processors that are actually inside these Macs. And that's what they've done. Essentially, what Apple have done here is they've built the processors for the iPhones and for the iPads for a while now, and they've just taken that technology. I mean, they've not just copy and pasted it into a Mac, but they have obviously developed it based on that experience into a Mac. I mean, people don't realize either. I mean, I have an iPad Pro 2020 model, which apparently the processor inside that is faster than any current laptop, mm-hmm. which blows my mind. I mean, but when I think about it, when I think about the iPad experience, it is slick. You know, you press that power button, you're not waiting for anything. It's on. It's ready to go. It's happening now. I want to, you know, open up my iPad, my Face ID kicks in, I'm into the apps, I'm sending messages, I'm responding to emails. You know, it's all happening there and then. And I think that's the point, really, that we want to get to with this. Because I think people are wondering, and there's a lot of question marks, and I want to try and help people with this one this week. You know, you're hearing about all this new technology, and you're hearing about all this, and it's all gobbledygook to most people, mainly me. But I just want to know how fast it will be. But I will say this. I am very excited about the speeds that are being talked about here. Now, we don't know for sure how good this will be, but here's a comparison which I thought was interesting. Last year, I bought myself a MacBook Pro, 2019 model. It was just about 2 weeks before the MacBook Pro 16-inch came out. I bought the 15-inch one. You know me, I'm always so ahead of the curve. And I like to help Apple get rid of their surplus stock, so I do that by purchasing it. And I got this actually when I was over in Canada. So, and the reason for that was because, you know, you save a few quid when you do it that way. I'm not encouraging people to do that. I don't know if it's against the law. I don't know. I don't think it is. But, you know, as long as you chuck the box away, it's fine. And so I come back over and, you know, I've got my MacBook and I'm really, really, really happy with it. I've spent a lot of money on this machine, probably upwards of $4,000 on this machine. Very powerful, topped out with all the fastest processor, i9 processor from Intel. You know, it's got 32 gig of RAM in it. It's got a 2 terabyte hard drive. It is fast, you know, huge graphics card, all that stuff. Imagine my shock, and part delight, I guess, as well, that I learned that the new MacBook Air, the base level MacBook Air that's coming in at 999, so just, you know, a pound off 1,000, is going to be just as fast, if not faster, in terms of processing and power than my MacBook Pro 2019, which cost me, you know, four times that amount. And I think that's what's really interesting here. And, you know, for someone, I mean, like you, Tim, I mean, you're not a Mac guy. You're an iPhone guy. You love your iPhone. You're an iPad guy. But you're not a Mac guy. You must be hearing about all this, because I guess you probably watched this event last week thinking, yeah, okay, fine, whatever, it's a Mac. But, you know, even you must be thinking, well, hang on, you know, I use my PC all the time, and, you know, what kind of performance am I getting out of that compared to what I could get out of something like this?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, of course, the tech geek in me is going, oh my gosh, they're getting these speeds and this quality of graphics and all these kind of things. And so, yeah, the old tech geek in me is going, this is nice. And then the consumer in me is going, yeah, but do I need this right now? Would I prefer to wait for, you know, next year when it's expected that, you know, maybe they'll do the 13 or 16 inch pro versions and update the outside as well as what they've done with the internals this year. And so maybe, you know, do some other updates and things and wait and see what that might bring. So I'm watching with a very interested eye because I am intrigued by it because, like you said, and going back to something that Robin said, the chips that are in at least maybe the 11, if not the 12, you know, the iPhone 12s, yeah, that processor is what they're using, except, like Robin said, they've beefed it up just a little bit to handle things like Thunderbolt and to beef up the graphics engine and things of that nature. So, you know, the A14, well, we'll just say A14X basically at this point, you know, that's basically what this M1 is with a little bit more added on to it. And that's pretty cool because I know how fast that A14 chip is in the iPhone 12. Mm-hmm. But what you talked about, Stephen, is exactly right. What am I looking at? Why am I looking at these three, you know, MacBooks and you know, and Pro and saying, okay, what is this going to do for me? Something that came up during the event when we all gathered together as we do to listen to it and comment on it or banter about it. Commentary that could probably never be played anywhere else. but we had talked about, and I know Stephen, you were concerned about this, saying, well, okay, there's three different ones. They all have the M1 processor. What's the point? What's the difference? I know you and Andy were looking on the internet like crazy. And basically what I can glean from this and some of the reviews and things that I've looked at is that the Mac Mini is being designed just to work. It may not be able to be the best at doing all those pro things, because of course that's what the pro's for. So it's just going to work. The battery's going to be great. It's just going to do the everyday, probably even more than everyday things that you need it to do. But then when you're looking at the Air and the Pro has a fan because it's going to be expected to not only just work and keep moving and keep doing everything it needs to do, but at a high level. So if you're doing high-end coding and, you know, really deep in-depth kind of, you know, design, graphics design, coding, video editing, things of that nature, that's what the fan is going to be for on the Pro, because it needs to keep that M1 chip cool. The iPad. I'm doing it at Robin. The MacBook Air, the Air doesn't have a fan. And so it's going to get to a point where it's going to throttle the processor just a little bit and say, no, you can't really do all that. So you got to back off a bit. We don't have the fan to keep this cool. And by doing that, it brings the price down just that little bit. And so that's what I'm looking at, is would I want to do an Air? Because I'm not going to need a Pro. So if I ever bought one, I'm not going to be doing the high-end intense, you know, coding and all that kind of thing that a Pro would do. So I think an iPad, or I did it again. Jeez, it's catching. The MacBook Air, gosh.
It gets so confusing with all these products, isn't it?
It really is. Well, my brain is still stuck on the last events of iPads and everything else. So it's just this three events from Apple in 3 months has just got my head spinning. But no, I really do like the MacBook Air. I mean, the Mini is fine. And I am intrigued by the Mini, like Robin had said. But the Air is kind of interesting because I'm not pushing it so hard that I need that fan to keep it cool.
Yeah, but here's the interesting thing. And we all picked up on this. We were all watching the event together. And there was something that stood out glaringly. I mean, it was almost what Apple didn't say at the event that kind of we were talking about. Yes. And a couple of things that came up. One was that the processor that's inside the MacBook Air, the Mac Mini, and the new MacBook Pro are exactly the same. They're all 8-core CPUs and 8-core GPUs, which means 8-core processor, 8-core graphics processor. And when you think about it, let me be absolutely, you know, on the point on this. The MacBook Air, weirdly, the base model at 999, has a 7-core GPU versus the one up, which has got the 8-core. Not quite sure why, although there are a lot of stories flying around as to why.
Yeah, from what I understand, that's something that happens on the line when they're producing these. Sometimes it'll happen where not all 8 cores are just so in testing and at the right speeds and things, and they might get 7 out of 8.
Yeah.
And some companies will ditch it and just say, not defective, not good. Apple decided, you know what? It's 7 cores. They're really fast. They're testing well. yeah, why don't we just put them in a, you know, put them in a MacBook Air and sell it for a little cheaper. So why not? I mean, that's the biggest speculation that I've heard, and it makes sense.
Pushing fewer pixels as well, because it's a smaller
screen.
I heard you say that in another podcast. I'm not entirely sure that's... Is that true? Is it really pushing less? I mean, because I mean, both the 13-inch MacBook Airs are the same. So they're both pushing the same screen, right?
I don't know. I thought they had a slightly different pixel resolution.
Right.
Okay. I know they're both P3 now, which is really good. That's a wider color gamut. I think the main takeaway here is that these performance isn't going to be an issue. So you can look and say, well, oh, you know, it's only got 8 gig of RAM. You know, I need more. But that's on Intel. That's where the RAM is separate. This is all on the same chip. And it's not going be getting pushed out through bus lanes where there isn't, you know, the same bandwidth, etc. So,
well, that was the second point I wanted to bring up, because the second thing is that on the Apple website, when you go and select a machine, and you know you can choose to upgrade it, you know, hard drive or graphics or RAM. The only options you have now are RAM and hard drive. Those are your two options. Now RAM you can push it to 16 gig. But not 32, can't go any higher than that now. Does it need to go higher than that? That's one question. But the fact that it's not there suggests that there maybe is some kind of restriction on that new M1 processor at the moment. I mean, there's certainly a few question marks around the number of Thunderbolt ports as well. There are now only 2 versus 4, I think, on the MacBook Pro. I think I'm right in that. And, you know, so there's question marks over the capability of the processor to some degree. And I think you're all kind of coming at this with different opinions. And I'm thinking, putting this together, I think what you all say kind of adds up to where I think it may be that you've got a processor that's new, that's capable of so much at the moment, and is probably capable of a lot more. But they're just teasing it out at the moment. I mean, for example, the Mac Pro lineup, they're suggesting that there will be 12-core GPUs and CPUs coming out, and that of course will open up all kinds of opportunities for, you know, multi-track audio editing, multiple tracks when you're editing film, all that stuff. So, you know, the opportunities are seems endless in terms of this new chip, and I think it says a lot, and I think we need to give a nod here to Intel. You know, the question that a lot of podcasters and people I've been listening to have been asking, and bloggers have been asking, is this the death of Intel? You know, I don't think it is, personally, because, you know, no, we still have a PC market.
How many years ago did we say AMD was going to be the death of Intel? And,
well, that's right, yeah. That's right.
And, you know, it's just, I don't think it'll be the death of Intel. I think they're going to have to take a step back and really think about how they approach processing and what they're doing. But they definitely still have a Windows PC market, you know, Alienware market. I believe they're, I might be wrong on that, but I think they might still be using Intel.
I've got so many questions I want to ask about this, but ultimately, I think the key question I want to ask you both is, based on what we've all heard and what we've all experienced with these events, what is the best Mac to buy? I mean, if you're currently in the market, if you've got a 2015 MacBook Pro or a MacBook Air, and you're sitting there thinking, that's getting a bit old now, you know, macOS Big Sur is out. It's not performing quite the way I hoped on this. You know, the fans are running a bit hot. It's just not behaving. I maybe should upgrade. What's the one to buy? Now, first off, the MacBook Air is the most popular MacBook out there. That's the one that always sells, primarily in education, I think. Mac Mini is very popular with people who are developers because they tend to want a small, easy-to-use you know, with lots of ports as well, a little machine that doesn't cost the earth. It's also very popular in server farms because you can rack thousands of them up.
And with blind people.
I'll get to that. I will get to that because, you know, but I think the MacBook Pro as well is, you know, certainly for your pro people. I think a lot of people would find that the MacBook Air is enough. But yeah, I mean, for blind people, there are two choices for me. I think it's the MacBook Air or the Mac Mini, because, I mean, unless you're working in a creative world, unless you're editing lots of video, then...
If you're a music editor, yeah.
Music editor, possibly, yeah. But again, the MacBook Air, the new MacBook Air with this new processor, is much beefier. I mean, here's the cards on the table. I bought a MacBook Air 3 months ago, and I sold it 2 months ago because I was doing web testing for a company, and in the middle of... the web testing, and bearing in mind all I had open was Microsoft Teams and the Chrome browser, and the fans were going like a 747 on the runway, and the heat coming off this thing, it was ridiculous. And I thought, you can't even handle Chrome and Teams? So, and that's Intel's fault. That is absolutely Intel's fault, and that's at their door. So if this new one can handle that, I'll be happy. But I'm sure it'll handle a lot more beyond that. And they are saying, and they even named apps like Final Cut Pro, which is a video editor I use, that is very resource hungry, and it will be able to handle multiple 4K threads in that. So I think, you know, I personally think the MacBook Air and the Mac Mini, and considering that Mac Mini price starting at, what, $699? You know, entry level into the Mac world. I mean, come on, this is the cheapest entry point ever, and just as powerful, it seems.
I would say that based on what you just described, I mean, you broke it down nicely for the three different reasons as to why people would want any of the three of them. Based on kind of the, if we say what you just said about using the Air, if that's the ceiling, if, you know, editing a couple of videos and doing some of that kind of thing, that's kind of the high end of what you're going to do with the Air. I think from what it sounds like with this new M1 chip, that will be perfect for the Air. If you're wanting to do anything more than that, you're going to want the Pro, because the Pro's got the fan. This MacBook Air is going to be super, super quiet. They are marketing this so hard to be super quiet because it's not having the fan. And it, like I said, it is going to throttle that processor. You know, like I said earlier, you know, if you're starting to push it a little bit too much, it's designed to back it off a little bit. So if you're doing any more than what you described, that's when you've got to say, okay, I'm a developer, or I'm doing a lot of high-end coding, or multiple video edits and things like that, that I need a lot more for, and I need that fan to keep it cool, then that's the Pro. Otherwise, absolutely, the Air is the one to go for. However, there are so many reasons, as you said, $699 for the Mini. How can you argue with that?
That's kind of where I'm at, yeah.
For me, it all comes down to the software, which we haven't, you know, really kind of confirmed in people's minds, but the software is going to be very different. This is a different operating system. It's a rebuilt from the ground up on a different architecture on this ARM-based chips. And so it's probably going to have more in common with iOS than Mac OS had before with Intel.
Yep.
So for me, I'm not worried about a Gen 1 hardware scenario. I have faith in them that it won't be, you know, really glitchy or anything, or have some fundamental issues. I know that there have been in hardware releases in the past, you know, you're holding it wrong with the iPhone 4, etc. So, but that's not uppermost in my mind. It's that this operating system is rebuilt from the ground up. There may or may not be software that you need that will run on it. And if it does, is VoiceOver, for example, going to be a similar experience to what we know with Mac OS? You know, VoiceOver on iOS and Mac OS are only have the same name. They don't have anything else in common. They're completely different. They interact in a very different way. You know, they've got different legacy, you know, histories and that sort of thing. So for me, there's a huge question mark over what VoiceOver is going to feel like on Mac OS Spicer on Apple Silicon. And, you know, is it going to feel exactly the same? I'm sure that they'll have implemented exactly the same keystrokes because they want people to be able to transfer over easily. But, you know, will it be the same? I don't know. So that, for me, I'm really interested to see.
One final point, and I'm sorry to push along because we've got so much to get through today on the show. I want to, for once, I'm going to keep us on track. I know this is very unusual for me. I'm going to be as efficient as one of these new MacBooks, right? You know, my final thing is around software, because a lot of people will be asking the question, you know, will I be able to use this app, or can I use that app, and what can I do here? Well, there's a couple of notable exceptions, but essentially you can do anything and use any app you like. What will happen is that, you know, the apps that are built for this new architecture will run, obviously, at full capacity. Those who are not will still run at full capacity. In fact, in some cases, they're saying these apps will run better on this new system, but it will use this emulation mode called Rosetta 2, and that is really just a way of turning what, you know, was something that was running on Intel into something that runs now on Apple Silicon. So you will still be able to use a number of apps. There might be a couple of issues there, so don't say to me, well, I tried this app and it didn't work, because look, I can't see every single app on earth will work. But if the emulation is capable of taking apps that ran on Intel at Macs and put them onto Silicon Macs, then you should have a high success rate. There is one thing missing, though, and this might affect some people, and that's Boot Camp. Apple Boot Camp won't be part of this, will it, Robin?
Nope.
So that's
wrong
that
architecture. Yeah. Yep.
And there's no, we're still not entirely sure how virtualization will work either. So I know, for example, with you, you love to have your virtual Mac up and running. So you've got VMware, you've got your Windows instance on there. Will that even work on this? I mean, there's no support at the moment, I don't think, for
VMware
Silicon.
Are not saying anything. They're not giving any time frames. Parallels, which is the other one, have, but they still haven't sort of, they've said they're doing it, but they haven't said when it's going to come out. And there's still no, I mean, we know that Rosetta 2 allows you to run Intel programs, but will this new version of Parallels allow you to run the Intel version of Windows? Because if it's only going to support Windows on ARM, then you've got the whole problem with the lack of software on Windows on ARM compared to the normal, in quotes, Windows. So you've got, you know, that problem will exist within that as well.
And on that, I'll just say real quick that, that is kind of the point, that some of these things are up in the air. Tim Cook himself said in June when they announced this to be a thing that this will be a slow rollout over a couple of years, which is the same thing that Steve Jobs said in 2005 when it went, you know, PowerPC and Intel, you know, could take up to 2 years. Now, in that case, it only took a year, year and a half. But this time we've had the pandemic and things like that. So this is just kind of their entry level. Let's get the M1 chips out there. Basically the same old exterior, completely different interiors. Probably in 6 months or so, 7 months, we might see new, well, we should see new ones, you know, that'll be total redesigns. And we'll have a better idea and understanding of how the emulation is going to work, you know, what could be different aesthetically, how these processors are going to work. These are the entry level ones. I truly believe in the middle of next year, we're going to see some that are going to be in the more, you know, thousands, you know, in that regard, because they're going to start really beefing these up, I think.
If you're in any doubt as to Apple's confidence in this, here's something to think about. The MacBook Air lineup that was launched with this new M1 chip, all Intel versions of that laptop are now gone from the Apple Store. Now, of course, you could jump to Costco or, I guess, Amazon or, you know, another store, PC World or whatever, and go and get, you know, one before it all gets, you know, wiped out. But Apple are going all in on this. So, and if you're sitting there thinking, well, should I hold off? Should I wait? Well, what are you waiting for? This is the way it's going. If you need a machine today, then, you know, you this is your option. And this is your best choice. It really is. And probably better to get on the bandwagon now.
Do we know about Braille displays and stuff like that, though?
Well, yeah. I mean, there are a lot of question marks around accessibility. And I guess those questions need to be answered. But again, this is where we're heading. So, you know, if you're going to make that decision, I mean, the best thing to do, if it's possible, is go to an Apple store and try it. That might not be feasible at the moment. But, you know, you could, I don't know what Apple's return policy is like. I know that the other company that starts with A's got not a bad one. So you could always just buy it and send it back, you know, if you're unsure. But, you know, AppleViz.com is the best resource to look at for this. You know, if you don't know that website, go to AppleViz, AppleViz.com. They will be reviewing this extensively, I'm sure. And so will we once I get my hands on one. I'm buying myself one, either the MacBook Air or the Mac Mini. I don't know which one yet. Probably the Mac Mini, if I'm honest. Robin, I know that's what you're keen to get as well, Robin. So yep. I'm quite keen on this to see how it goes. Andy, we haven't had a chance to get your take on this. You're a PC guy, right? So, you know, I know you're probably not going to buy a Mac any point soon, but...
My AMD Ryzen 3 running here in the background, quietly and efficiently. No jet 747 jets on the runway or anything like that. No. But I it's interesting.
Have you got Teams open? That's the question.
Yeah, and Chrome.
That's the killer.
Get those two on.
I've got a lot of Chrome, yeah, but no Teams. Yeah, it's managing Zoom, so we're okay.
Oh, that's good.
Now, I watched the event with you guys. It's interesting, but I'm just not in that. I'm not in that market for them. I'm not in that... yeah, I wish I was, but unfortunately I'm not.
Maybe I'm interested in this. So what's your take on this from someone who is, you know, on the outside, if you like, looking in at this, thinking, are you thinking this is all just hype, or do you think there's something in this?
Well, I know it's hype because it's Apple. They've been doing that for, 20-odd years now, hyping up themselves, the marketing material. Yeah, it will talk about, you know, your neural engine does 11 trillion operations per second. That sounds wonderful. But like you said earlier, Stephen, what does that mean? It doesn't mean anything to me. I mean, what did the last... how many trillions did the last machine do? And the big worry is what you mentioned at the start as well, is that you could buy something in 2019 and already you're looking at the replacement. Not 12 months later, you're already looking at...
Stephen we're talking about, though, so...
That's true, yeah.
Throwing that out there.
That's true.
Yeah.
But no, but you're right. I mean, I was annoyed when the 16-inch MacBook Pro came out, and it was only 3 weeks difference. I was really tempted to take it back, but I thought, I don't know if the Apple Store in the UK are going to be too keen to take the one back that I bought in Canada. You know, they probably would do, in fairness, because, you know, you can do that. That's perfectly acceptable.
Why is this covered in maple syrup? What's going on?
How stereotypical of you, Andy. That's disgraceful. Yes. Right, look, let's move on.
16 billion transistors. What does that mean? Yeah. I don't know what that means.
It means a lot of radios. Okay, so who needs all that? Right, okay, let's move on because I want to talk about something else because, you know, other things have been going on this week, guys, you know, believe it or not. And one of those things that I've been finding out about this week is the EasyReader app is now available on a new platform. Paul Porter is from RNIB's Technology for Life team. He joins us on the line. Hi to you, Paul.
Hi, Stephen. Yeah, it's been a while, but it's great to be back on the show.
Yes, it is great to have you here. I'm really keen to talk to you because I know you want to tell us about something fantastic regarding EasyReader. We know it's available on Apple devices. We know it's available on Android devices. It's now available on some other devices as well.
Absolutely. So for the last, since February, really, we've launched our RNIB reading services, and that's going really well. And as you say, it was available on Apple devices, on Android, but it's now available on Amazon Fire tablet devices. And those are really great because they're relatively inexpensive. They've got speech on it, voice view, which is really good. It is similar to Android TalkBack or VoiceOver on Apple devices, so it's completely interactive with speech and touchscreen. Has lots of apps. And a couple of weeks ago, Dolphin made it available on these devices. And it's been a little while because, you know, it's a process Dolphin have to go through to make it available and for Amazon to accept the app and so on. And, you know, quite a lot of our readers were asking, you know, why isn't EasyReader available on the Fire tablets? But it now is available. It's a free download from the Fire, the Amazon Fire store. And it pretty much works in exactly the same way as the Android version. So it's exactly the same functionality. But then, of course, gives you access to, you know, the 30,000 plus audiobooks that we have available on RNIB reading services.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And it comes at an interesting time for us because just a couple of weeks ago, we had Mohammed Atif here on from the Technology for Life team talking about the value of voice view on the Fire tablet and showing us all how to get started with it. So that just is really timely that this has happened, actually. So that's great. And the other thing about it is the Fire tablet, it has such a better entry point for a lot of people in terms of price to a tablet ecosystem. It's very accessible, but it's a lot cheaper as well. So, you know, you're not going to spend as much money on one of those as you would on, say, an iPad or an Android tablet.
Absolutely. And, you know, I think, what, £40-50, you know, for a model. The other great thing, of course, is that they've got, you know, Amazon Alexa built in as well. So you can either interact with that with a touch screen or you can just, you know, say the wake word, you know, and you can use it exactly as a standard Echo device. So it's got lots of functionality, lots of different apps outside of the Amazon, you know, ecosystem as well. So, you know, BBC iTV, you know, apps for playing radio. But, you know, you can simply say, you know, A-Lady play RNIB Connect Radio and it'll do it, you know, all hands-free. And also, you know, adding on to what we're doing with EasyReader, later on in the year or, you know, hopefully early next year, you'll be able to, if everything goes well, you'll be able to access RNIB reading services using your smart speaker, you know, so be it a Fire tablet or a Google Home or whatever device you've got, with, you know, Amazon, Google, you'll be able to talk to your device and access reading services. So there's lots of exciting developments. You know, it's great we're working with companies like Dolphin, and we're working with other manufacturers who develop software and hardware for, you know, accessing books from different countries. So, you know, there's a lot going on in reading services, and, you know, it's really exciting to be a part of that.
Yeah, definitely. And I think as well, you know, I mentioned cost, which can often be a barrier to people getting access to this hardware. You know, having the ability to buy something that is a bit cheaper, as you say, £40-£50, and, you know, if you catch a sale, you can sometimes get them even cheaper, especially as we head up to the holiday season. So, you know, it'll be an interesting time for a lot of people who might be thinking about getting a tablet, thinking, well, I can't really afford an iPad or an Android tablet. I'll maybe get one of these Fire tablets. Even though they're cheaper, though, Paul, you know, you're not getting an entirely cheap experience, are you? I mean, you know, you're not going to get the same fluid experience, perhaps, of an iPad, but you will get a usable piece of technology, which, for someone starting out with tech, that might actually be quite useful, quite helpful.
Absolutely. You know, given you've got the voice control built in as well, it's great. And what Amazon have done with VoiceView, they've made some of the gestures similar to those that Apple implement. So, you know, if you want to pause and resume audio, it's simply a double tap with two fingers. Whereas with other Android devices, you know, you've actually got to find the play button and double tap with one finger. So, you know, implementing the gestures that Apple use, some of them are, you know, it does make it in some ways easier to use than some other Android devices.
Yeah. Well, listen, it's great to hear that Easy Reader is now available on Fire tablets, as well as iPads, as well as iPhones, as well as Android phones and tablets as well. I think this is fantastic news. Paul Porter, thanks for coming on and telling us about it.
Thank you, and speak soon.
Great to hear from you, Paul. Thank you so much for coming on, and we look forward to testing out the Dolphin Easy Reader app on Fire tablets. So if you've got one of those tablets, it's well worth checking out. Now, you might have one of those tablets thanks to Amazon, and this is something you can hear about on the RNIB Connect podcast, where I sit down with Amazon, a representative from Amazon, not the entire company, but a representative of Amazon, to talk about this fantastic work that's been done. Amazon donating a number of Fire tablets to RNIB to go out to blind and partially sighted people who've been feeling cut off since lockdown. So, yeah, really interesting story. Check it out on the RNIB Connect podcast. And we will try and get that interview into the coming shows, but we are absolutely out the door with content over the next couple of weeks. So we thought we'd put it on the podcast, give you a chance to listen to it. Like I say, find it on the RNIB Connect podcast, where I'm talking to Amazon. Right, let's move on, because we've got lots to talk about. We'll get to some emails as well, but right now let's turn to Chris Turner from the Technology for Life team for this week's feature. And this time around, we're learning how to customize our iOS gestures. Chris.
Hello, this is Chris from RNIB's Technology for Life team. I'm going to talk to you today about how to create or customize voiceover gestures on iOS. Now, you might think, surely we've got about 20 gestures already. Why would I want to add to them or complicate them? Well, whilst it's true, you can do a hell of a lot with those. Copy and pasting, editing, moving through web elements, that sort of thing. Sometimes you can improve your productivity by adding to them. It can also help with things like the rotor, which I have seen people struggle with. So you can assign a different gesture to perform those type of functions. For this demo, I'm going to be using my iPhone 6S running iOS 14. I don't know when this customization feature first became available, however, it's certainly on iOS 13 as well, as my main phone, an SE, runs that. I just haven't got round to upgrading it yet. It should be mentioned as well, whilst this is all about customizing gestures, you can't draw a unique gesture yourself on the screen and then use that. Rather, you pick from a predefined list, albeit a long one, and then assign a function to it. I'm going to use the rotor as an example and use the gesture for moving to previous and next rotor items and assign a two-finger swipe right for next and two-finger swipe left for previous. As this, of course, is a voiceover function, we have to go into settings Accessibility and VoiceOver.
Stocks, iTunes Store, App Store. Settings. Two new item. Settings. Search. Chris Turner. Apple ID. Airplane mode. Wi-Fi. Bluetooth. Mobile. VPN. Notifi. Sounds. Do not. Screen time. General. Control. Display. Homes. Accessibility. Button. Accessibility features help. Vision. Heading. VoiceOver. On. Button.
Now, this is something that can throw you when you're new to VoiceOver. Whilst it says VoiceOver on button, double tapping on that doesn't turn it off. Rather, it will take you into the VoiceOver settings. So that's what we'll do.
VoiceOver. On. VoiceOver speaks items. Tap once to select. Double tap to add. Learn more. VoiceOver practice. Speaking rate. Speaking rate. 40. Speech. Button. Braille.
Now, there's a couple of ways of doing this, but it's probably easier, I think, if you know what you want to change, to do it from the top item, which is all commands.
VoiceOver. Back button. Commands. Heading. All commands. Button. Interaction. Button.
And then we keep flicking to the right until we find rotor.
Basic navigation. Text navigation. Advanced navigation. Editing. Rotor. Button.
Double tap that, of course.
Next rotor. Button. Rotor. Next
and the
rotor.
First item there
button.
Is next rotor. So let's have a look at that.
Touch gestures. Heading. Two finger rotate clockwise. Actions available.
So there we have the default action. Yep, the default action, two finger rotate clockwise. But let's add to that.
Add gesture. Button. Add gesture.
Now,
cancel. Button.
Just stop voice over there. We are presented with a whole list of gestures that we can pick from. So let's just have a look through this kind of layout.
Touch gestures. Heading. Search. Tap. One finger. Heading. One finger single tap. Dim. One finger double tap. Dimmed. One finger triple tap.
So you'll notice these are arranged under headings, and we get the tap gestures first of all. The first one finger tap gestures.
One finger single tap. Dimmed. One finger double tap. Dimmed.
And notice they are dimmed. Now, that's presumably because you can't assign those to the rotor because they are core gestures. You need them for basically activating everything. So it won't let you mess your phone up completely by, you know, assigning things that were going to break other gestures. Let's keep going to the right.
One finger triple tap. One finger quadruple tap. Tap. Two fingers.
Now, as I know there are headings in here, let's speed this up a bit. I'm going to use my rotor, the regular gesture, to turn to headings, then flick down till we get to the two-finger gestures.
Vertical, audio, language, character, word, headings, tap, tap, four-finger, swipe, swipe, two fingers, heading.
Here we are. So now let's flick to the right.
Two-finger swipe left. Two-finger swipe right.
And that's the one we want because it's for the next rotor item, so I just double-tap that to select.
Rotor. Back button. Next rotor. Heading.
Words. Let's put me back on our rotor gestures, you know, on the touch gestures page.
Touch gestures. Heading. Two-finger rotate clockwise. Two-finger swipe right.
So you can see now
actions
it's still
available.
Got the standard two-finger rotate right. And a two-finger flick right as well. So now let's do it to the previous rotor gesture. So I'll go back.
Next rotor. Button. Next rotor item. Previous rotor. Button.
That's the one we want. Previous rotor.
Touch gestures. Heading. Add gesture. Button. Cancel. Button.
And again, I'm going to use my rotor as is to find the headings and jump down to the two-finger swipes.
Speaking rate. Headings. Touch. Tap. 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 Swipe. Swipe. Two fingers. Two-finger swipe left.
And that's the one we want, so just simply double-tap that.
Rotor. Back button. Previous rotor. Heading. Edit. touch gestures. Head, two finger rotate and tick clockwise. Two finger swipe left.
And there it is. Now, if you made a mistake and you wanted to delete one of these gestures, it's your usual actions thing. So if I just flick up there, you'll hear a couple of options.
Delete. Activate. Delete. Activate. Default.
So let's actually test this. I'll go back to the home screen. First of all, with the regular rotor gesture.
Characters, words, headings.
So that's a two-finger rotate right, or rotate clockwise, the usual one. And anti-clockwise.
Words, characters, actions.
So now let's try our new two-finger swipe right.
Characters, words, headings.
And two-finger swipe left.
Words, characters, actions.
It works! So, that's all done. One thing you might notice, though, is with the normal rotor gesture, you get that kind of scratchy noise. If I mute the speech, you'll hear what I mean.
Speech off.
When you do your two-finger swipe right or left, you don't get that. The rotor still moves, but you don't get that noise.
Speech on. Characters, words. Characters, actions, language.
That's how you customize voiceover gestures. I won't go into this now, but it's worth noting in that screen, in those settings, you can also add or modify keyboard commands as well. And that's it. Have fun customizing.
Thank you to Chris Turner there for telling us all about different ways to customise our iOS gestures. I love that idea of changing out some of those, especially that rotor, because, you know, I find that whole turning thing with two fingers quite awkward. So no, I really like that. I'm going to go and do that. Okay, thank you for that, Chris. He is from the Technology for Life team. If you want more from them and you want to contact them with questions about your technology problems, then do get in touch. They're available 9 to 5 weekdays. You can get in touch with them by calling the RNIB helpline on 0303 123 9999. That's 0303 123 9999, or you can email the helpline, or indeed the Technology for Life team directly, at tfl@rnib.org.uk. that email address again, tfl@rnib.org.uk. Okay, time for these.
Email. We get email. We get your email every day. Here's your mail today.
Ding dong. It's Emails Andy. That wasn't creepy at all, was it?
Hi.
Right, okay. So let's get into the emails, Andy, because, well, there's lots of them to read through. Okay, we've got to do this. We do it every week. It's become a tradition here on Tech Talk. Andy, how many pages of emails do we now have?
We have 14 pages of emails. We went through...
Hurrah!
Trimmed a few up. And yes, you'll be hearing them over November and December, I'm sure. But yes,
January,
14 now.
February,
14.
March. Right, okay. Okay, let's get into them. What have you got?
Hello, chaps. As an Android user, may I offer my thoughts to Adrian on the subject of buying an Android device to run Google Lookout. This was featured back on episode number 342. Firstly, the Echo... I echo the team's thoughts that he will get far more for his money buying a phone rather than a tablet. For some reason, Android tablets have always seemed to be an afterthought amongst Android-using manufacturers. The hardware is always dated and the operating system is way out of date. Unless Adrian is particularly keen to have the large screen, I would say buy the phone every time. Samsung was mentioned, unless Adrian may have a tablet. I will dispute that recommendation. I've had a Samsung phone in the past, and yes, their technology is cutting edge, probably the best you'll get in Android world, but he will pay beyond his needs for the privilege. Also, Samsung heavily rebranded Android, introducing an increased possibility of app incompatibility as they do so. Adrian's needs seem far lower than anything beyond a well-chosen budget to mid-range phone. It's not clear from his email just how much experience he has from smartphones. Possibly he thinks the only way to buy such a phone is with a contract. Please assure him that this is not the case. It's very easy to buy a smartphone outright and with no SIM. If Adrian only wants to use the phone about the house with his Wi-Fi, he never need put a SIM in it at all. It will simply operate as a small but very capable tablet. If he intends to use one outside, occasionally there's no reason why he shouldn't pay £1 for a pay-as-you-go SIM and then add a tenner on for credit. It will get the job done. Try to get the phone as close to stock Android as you can. He's gone on to say, you know, if you want some hints, you can get one with about 4 gig of RAM, 64 gig of memory. 32 gig will probably suffice as well. Yes, my A2... This is from Julian, by the way. My A2 is an Android One phone. That means that it's running a very pure version of Android. So much so that the first item that comes up on the settings menu is customize your Pixel. I hope that helps. That's negative, Julian.
No, not negative at all.
Julian the second.
Yeah. I want to put this out there for people who are Android fans who listen to the show. I mean, first of all, you're listening to me. This is amazing. Hello. We're all friends here, okay? We'll let you bring your silly Android phones and we'll sit and play.
How many have you bought over the years?
Don't ask. Don't
more
even
than me.
Ask. Yeah, no, yeah. I've tried. Look, I've done my bit. I've tried it. But, you know, I don't hate Android. And I know we laugh a lot about it. I don't hate Android. I actually don't. I'm in the Apple ecosystem. That's it for me. I'm stuck here now. I will never leave.
The last Android you bought, you loved, I seem to remember.
I do. I love their phones. I think, and I think the Android phones generally, I mean, I'm talking generally here because there's lots of different manufacturers, they are more sexy. They've got better cameras. They've got, you know, in some cases, better screens. They're faster in some cases. You know, they're brilliant. And cheaper. Yeah, exactly. So, you know, really good devices. So, you know, if you're starting out or you're in the world of Android, you're in a good place. You know, for us iPhone people, it costs us an absolute fortune. We've got to wait a year for the next one. So, you know, because there only is one. But anyway, I think what I'd like to ask people to do is email in with their suggestions. Because I'd love to put a list together, you know, a communal list with everybody who listens of what those kind of budget Android phones that work for you are. So I'm thinking, okay, low vision, that's one thing, but for blind people who want to use TalkBack, because my big fear has always been with TalkBack, that if you buy a phone that's, say, 160, 170 quid, are you going to get a decent enough experience all the time? Now, my closest experience I had to this, which, and I must say, I loved this little phone, was a Moto G5, I think it was. And I actually thought that was a great little phone. I really liked it. I used it for a good while. And I still have fond memories about it because I had a really nice experience. It wasn't the fastest phone in the world, but it wasn't the slowest either. It was actually pretty functional. And I know Moto have gone on. I think we're up to, the G7 now, maybe. So, and you know, and they've brought these out, and it's really nice little phones. So there are phones you can buy that are cheaper. But what I'm wondering is, what are your experiences? Let's put together a list, and let's let other people know. Because not everybody... And Julian makes this point, not everybody has the money to or wants to spend hundreds and hundreds of pounds on a new phone. So yeah, I know I'll say Samsung's great and Google Pixel are great, but if you can get something that's in the hundreds, you know, low hundreds, why not? So, but what are the options? What's a good Android phone running TalkBack you're using, you're enjoying? There's my question to you this week, dear listener.
I think that's a really good question too, because for years we've talked about that with iPhone, you know, you pick up an iPhone, especially if it's even an iPhone that's been out within the last, you know, 2-3 years or even more, maybe in some cases, you know, you're going to pick it up. It's going to work. VoiceOver is going to work. It's going to be the same experience with Android. There is that fragmented operating system experience where it could be different. It could be completely different depending on, you know, what you're getting. And then is TalkBack going to work? Is it going to be a robust enough phone enough, you know, to handle TalkBack? And so if I ever were to go to Android, and at this point, like you, Stephen, I'm in the Apple ecosystem. So I'm not going to go to Android. However,
I'd love to.
I wouldn't discourage somebody at this point. There might have been a time where I would have, but if you did have a good list to say, you know what, I know that this isn't going to be too fragmented from native Android and TalkBack is going to work well on it, you find that device or that line of devices, even if it's the Pixel, fine. You know, the 3A or I guess the 4A now, you know, those are very nice phones and they're going to be stock Android and TalkBack is going to be a good experience. But other manufacturers, you don't know. And that's what the trick is there. And that's the only reason I would discourage anybody with Android, is because you don't know. But if we could get a list like that compiled, where we could say, you know what? Yeah, we're sure that this is going to be good. This is going to work out, and it could be lesser expensive and not too fragmented and not a bad experience. I think that'd be fantastic, because again, we know what we're getting with our Apple ecosystem. And I think that's why we cling to it so much.
But it's a costly game to get into, isn't it? I mean, and it is with any. I mean,
exactly.
Even if you buy an Android phone, you're still buying into an ecosystem. You're still buying into the Google architecture. But
well, yes, all of them had their own ecosystem. Amazon and even Microsoft now, they all want you in that ecosystem. They want your ongoing subscription.
And I think that that's one variable that you have with Android that you need to consider. So we should also ask people, you know, the operating system on it. We know that Samsung, who kind of have their own flavor of Android, do a good job. So that's brilliant. But do Huawei, do Xiaomi, you know, whichever it is that you're going to recommend, please do tell us, you know, is the operating system fine? You know, is it updated as regularly or regularly enough? Because many of them aren't.
But that's why it often comes back to that question. It often comes back to the same point, and everybody says it, even the haters who get in touch with me and say, yeah, you never know what you're talking about. And I'm like, well, yeah, but there's one thing we all agree on. Go for stock Android. Because, first of all, you're guaranteed to get the latest updates
regularly.
Which Samsung isn't. I know. And that's an interesting one. But then, if I'm honest, I tend to recommend Samsung to people who've got low vision, not blind people. I think there's a distinction there, because Samsung's the one that does give you the best, I think, anyway. And I haven't tried too many others, but the Samsung experience I've had is that they've always had better text. Now, if other manufacturers are listening to this and saying, well, my phone does that as well, well, come on and tell us about it. Because I'm not buying every phone in the market just to decide whether or not it's good or not. You know, and we need to get some recommendation. I know, that would be nice. I don't think my credit card or my wife would be too happy about that.
I feel like you're close. I mean,
it's not far
too
off
anymore.
Yeah, it's not too far off. Look, we're almost out of time. As I say, get in touch with us. You can email us. Andy, I know you're always very keen to get people's emails in. How do they do that?
Yes, they can contact me directly, or sometimes Stephen when he pokes his nose into the inbox as well. You can email us.
For a rummage.
For a quick look through the, you know, browse through. techtalk@rnib.org.uk.
That's it for our show this week. I hope you've enjoyed it. And if not, then you can email Andy and tell him, because we won't be checking in. So it's fine. But that is it for us. Do keep your emails coming. Do keep the conversation flowing as well. We love it. That's what it's all about. That's why we do this every week. As always, from Robin Christofferson and AbilityNet, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, guys.
Tim Schwartz from lifeafterblindness.com, thank you.
Thank you very much.
And emails Andy, as always. Thank you.
Thank you.
Catch you next time, guys. Bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.